When he was already 23 years old, Victor Diaz says he was pretty much functionally illiterate. He had been kicked out of six high schools by age 16. Diaz's story begins sadly like so many others, but his story has a very different ending than you might think. Today, Diaz is practically collecting academic degrees. He's got a bachelor's degree, a JD, and he's working towards his PhD at the University of California, Berkeley. To top it all off, Diaz has found a permanent home in education. He's the principal of BTEC, the Berkeley Technology Academy. It's a continuation high school, so Diaz is working with students who remind him of himself, those who have fallen through the cracks of the conventional education system. I sat down with Victor Diaz to talk about his non-traditional approach to education. But first I asked him when he realized he was actually a good student.
It wasn't until I was getting failing grades at the community college. And then I had a professor there who was a Latino professor and was the first Latino professor I think I'd ever had. And he had failed me. He had failed me in a previous paper. So I went in to talk to him about the grade I was going to get in the class. And he assured me in that meeting, even though the semester was only about halfway done, that I was going to get an F in the class. And he went on to tell me what a horrible student I was. And he did it with a lot of expletives and things that I wasn't really ready for. You know, all this time I thought, because he was Latino, I'm Latino, he's going to let me slide. And, you know, pretty much kind of the way I'd run my life prior to that, you know, just kind of just getting by. But he laid into me and cussed me out. And that's, I think, was the aha moment. And that was when I said, you know, I was at a dead end. I came to what appeared to be my final option. And I was pretty much screwing that up. And I was no longer 16 or 17 in high school. I was now, you know, almost 25. And so I think I was also at a place in my life where I knew that I had to start turning things around. And he helped to make me realize that.
Why did you decide that you wanted to go into education? You're now principal of Berkeley Technology Academy, or BTEC. Why that route?
While I was in community college, my work-study job was to go out and recruit kids for the community college. So I'd go out and talk about the school. And in doing so, I would meet students who were probably not even the best candidates for school, but we just hit it off. I mean, we had a lot in common. And so I didn't know it at the time, but I found myself kind of repairing all the things that were broken before that. And then through that process, as they were asking me questions about their application, the most very basic things. I either couldn't read and really understand, or I found myself with the inability to articulate myself in a way that would make any sense to anybody. So it became apparent that I needed to educate myself. That was the impetus for me wanting to further my education. And as I learned new things, it also became kind of the fuel to go out and reteach it. But again, because I was burned so badly in public schools, I didn't want that association with being a classroom teacher. But I think I was drawn to it, over time because of the, meeting more and more kids that had, you know, similar or even far worse experiences that I had in school, and really no one to advocate on their behalf. And when I came across that, whether I was in L.A. or San Diego or San Jose or San Francisco, the stories were identical, and you know, identical to mine. You know, a kid of color without a male role model in a school that was, you know, predominantly run by women, and you know, pretty much the boys just being, you know, self-destructive and misguided, and I felt like I needed to give back to that, you know, to that space.
So now you're the principal of BTEC. Tell us what makes this school special.
The thing that makes this school special is, well, right off the bat, I think it's the relationships that the adults have with the young people. It's a place of caring and respect first and foremost. And it doesn't mean that we're, you know, quote unquote, trying to be their friends, as some educators, I think, we'll talk about it in this context. It's about being mentors and sometimes being counselors and sometimes being teachers, but doing so in a way where we want to know the student, and the student is, you know, operating from that point of view that they know that they are known by us. The second thing is that we have a staff that reflects the population of the students we serve. So the staff is young, they're all folks of color, and that they all teach from that perspective of honoring the individual, honoring the culture, honoring the language, honoring the community, you know, the multiracial, biracial aspects of our communities. And those things are woven throughout the curricula.
And I've heard that you have said that you, I'm going to quote you, "I am their warrior. I feel commanded by them to break the cycle of failure." And then you've gone on to say, "I'm also motivated by the genius, the raw brilliance of our children. That this is precisely what schools strip from our children." Can you talk to me about that quote?
Yeah, the first part of that quote about the cycle of failure is something that I'm just now starting to coin that phrase, and it's mostly because we're now on our second generation of families that have gone to that attended this very continuation school that I'm now the principal of. It just shows that there needs to be more done for families that have struggled here.
And so we're talking about breaking this cycle of failure that you mentioned. What's your recipe? How do you break that cycle of failure?
Well, again, I think the biggest thing is that many of our young people go through life feeling invisible. If a student is going to feel empowered to change the system, they have to feel like they're, you know, appreciated and valued by that same system. So that's a big part of what we do. And I think that when we give students the space to build a relationship, to co-construct a relationship that's based on mutual love and respect, they can then start to take ownership of that space, you know? So that's a big part of the recipe. The second part of the recipe are the other resiliency things that we try to teach them, that when those things fail, when you are met with racism or when you are met with low expectations or when you are, you know, just not on the top of your game, we try to give them other resiliency kinds of skills. We do some of that work here with breathing and meditation and yoga and stuff like that. So that's another part of the recipe for us. And again, you know, teaching explicit critical thinking skills, critical reading skills, critical writing skills. You know, we, of course, those things are also embedded in the work that we do.
And let's talk just for a moment about the larger system. And imagine for a moment that you were to have larger systemic power in California. What do you think that the main things that you would change about this state's education system are?
The big piece that I'm you know, been connected to for the last, you know, 12 years is more closely examining what are the county schools, alternative schools, the court schools, what are they doing with regard to education and professional development and training. There are over 100,000 kids in that system. And those very same kids are the ones that come back into comprehensive schools and either exacerbate or create, you know, some very deep-rooted problems. So we have to look at the educational system as a whole for this population that are way out on the margins.